Hey, it is episode 125 of Decentralized Revolution. I'm Aaron Harris. Brandy is apparently on vacation this long Labor Day weekend. So Mike is here, and we have one of my favorite people in the Mises Caucus and in the world, really. Dave Casey, how's it going? We were trying to figure out where you were, and like Mike said, like San Diego. I thought it was Philadelphia. But
close, bro. This is Joe Biden's hometown, Wilmington, Delaware. You're looking at it. Building back better. It's going to be, you got about a year left till Trump
now,
comes back.
Is Delaware like West Virginia? You know, Robert Byrd was a senator from West Virginia for like 50 years. And when you drive through there, like literally everything is named after him. Like, is there a bunch of stuff named after Biden yet? Or has he been more low key about his 50 years in the Senate?
I think that there's some Biden stuff, but no, mainly I think they're low key for now. That'll come later. Okay. A lot of DuPont stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Very big around here.
Yeah.
I will be in Delaware tomorrow morning for some Mises Caucus restructuring stuff. So
okay.
let's just say that Delaware is the corporate headquarter capital of the world. So
that's right. More corporations than people here.
Is that true?
That is true.
I guess you're right.
There's like, not that I know many all the, people.
Like all the credit card companies.
Yeah, like a million three, I think. Something yeah. a little over a million people. But yeah, definitely more corporations are here.
Okay. So there's a lot to talk about, as there always is. But I thought, you know, this week, because it is kind of Labor Day and, you know, different things have kind of been happening in the LP and in the caucus and stuff lately. So I think that was kind of our plan for tonight, right, Mike?
Yeah, man. How's the LP doing? That's the title. And by the way, you don't have to sound so salty that Brandy's on vacation. Like, apparently, this chick's on vacation. it's a holiday, like, for God's sakes.
Right.
Well, I think some people do that. Now she's the only one who's made everyone. Like, I've missed a couple, and you've missed a couple. So, So
I'm sure everybody misses Brandy. The friggin' audience probably dropped by like 10% when you said that.
Yeah,
right.
We've had to.
What I lack in good looks, I will try and make up for in comic relief. So,
yeah. Same so here.
There is we are talking about the LP, so there should be and LP presidential candidates. So we've got
and that shit's pretty fucking funny, isn't it? So it'll be good.
That was my point. So like, I always wondered why, like, you know, there are some announced people already. And like, not just in the LP, but I've always wondered, like, what does it take for somebody who is not like famous or accomplished in the sort of the public, you know, mind, right? Somebody who doesn't have name recognition or like a lot of money to like, where do you have to get to be like, yeah, I'm going to run for president. Like, I've just never understood. And most of the announced people so far are not bad guys, but it's just like, you know, start with Congress or city council or something like that. I don't know, but hopefully that looks like it's changing soon. We've got a little bit of
There's been a couple pieces of news this week on that horizon. I mean, as far as the current field, like I said, historically people don't realize, I think, because you hear this sentiment sometimes of like, oh man, we really need to make the LP convention earlier in the cycle so that we can get a head start. And, you know, on the surface, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I used to agree with that. And then I got into the business of trying to recruit presidential candidates. Mm-hmm. I realized that would probably just lock us out from having good presidential candidates. Historically, the person who goes on to be the nominee almost never announces their campaign until about 6 months or so before the nomination convention. And that's, I mean, I looked at all the candidates going back to at least 88, and that was the case. And there was two people who announced, like, they put a year in before the general election that got the nomination. And that was Ron Paul in 1988 and Michael Badnarik in 2004. Now, Ron Paul, like, one thing that's important about that is that because the idea is, well, if we just got a head start, you know, we could do better in these elections. And that's what's really needed here. And with Ron Paul, he put a year in before the general election. and then did the general election. And it didn't really appear to make a difference whatsoever. And not only did it not appear to make a difference with like the electoral result, but it also didn't seem to make a big difference in the LP. I know it was very contentious in 88 between him and Russell Means. And at the following convention, apparently Murray Rothbard got booed while on stage at the convention. So then not long after that, he leaves the party. They basically, you know, conclude, you know, fuck these hippies and leave the LP. And then a few years later, they're mixing it up with Buchanan and trying the paleo strategy and all of that. So didn't seem to have a big effect there. And then with Badnarik, same thing. He put a year in, and then the very next convention, and that's the last radical candidate that we had. The very next convention, the Prags took over the party, and Bob Barr was our nominee after that. And the Prags held the party for, you know, almost two decades.
Yeah. And I think that people who have been sort of belly aching at, oh, we don't have a nominee yet, but like the whole structure and the whole goal for the LP presidential candidate is entirely different than Democrat Republican. Democrat Republican, they have primaries that start, you know, I think, you know, they're already debating now, you know, they have primaries that start in like January. So like you do have to get out ahead of that a couple of years out. Very, very seldom is there like a dark horse person who, you know, gets in at the, you know, a couple months before the convention. I can't remember. Like, they tried to get Mario Cuomo to do it in like 92, but Bill Clinton had kind of, you know, got up enough of a head of steam that I think the plan was that Cuomo was going to jump in, but then he chickened out because Clinton had some support. But for a libertarian candidate, it might be as a shock to some people, but the libertarian candidate for president is not going to win. Okay. And I think that, you know, there are people in our party who have said, oh, well, we have to pretend that we're going to win. And yes, we, you know, but to me, they say, you know, people will not listen to us if we're not in it to win it. But I say they will not listen to us if we pretend that we are going to win. Right. We have to say something like, well, if we had a fair, you know, if we had a good, you know, fifth estate as far as, you know, journalism, actually covered things, if we had fair ballot access laws, if we had a lot of things in place and it were about ideas, then yes, we could win, but we don't. So we're playing an entirely different game. And because the convention isn't until Memorial Day weekend, there's really no reason until, you know, after Labor Day for people to even sort of be seriously thinking about it. And when you think about it, like, who would want this job, right? Like, who would want to do this at considerable expense to himself with, you know, a lot of hard work and not much guaranteed payoff? So I'm still excited about what's going to happen, I think, but it's an entirely different ball game than Republicans and Democrats.
So I would just say, as somebody who's kind of like politically obsessed, that like, you know, and I'm paying attention to this shit, like, you guys are right, probably shouldn't be talking about presidential politics like super early on 2022. But like Mike Termott, you know, or somebody like that is going to get in the game early, right? Because he's got to put himself forward. So like in an ideal world, right? I don't know if you guys have done a podcast since Dave announced that he wasn't running. But in an ideal
world. We're getting into that.
Right. I mean, in an ideal world, right, you select the best of your elites, which was Dave, and you call upon him or her to do the thing, and they say yes. That would be ideal. Yes. That that didn't happen. And it could be, it doesn't have to be Dave. I'm saying, you know, respect to him and his decision. I'm just saying that would be, in the best case scenario, we would go after the people we want to represent us instead of people going, I'm the guy for the job. I'm the guy for the job. And I'm going to go on a 2-year tour, to, you know. But I will say, lesson learned, I think, that people are going to do that. So it would be cool to, like, just have surrogates everywhere who might be toying with the idea, because we all know this is a messaging campaign, essentially. And it does, you know, right now, for months, RFK has been out there running for president. You know what I mean? You'll get the mic if you're running for president. Josh Smith just got the mic on Timcast because he's running for president. So somebody's going to do it. I just think that maybe in, you know, upcoming years, we should adapt to that.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, but again, like the whole thing with getting our best people to run, like it is a very, very
Right. We need to attract, like the it needs to be something that would attract a natural. Absolutely, I agree with that.
It has been very difficult to find people who want to do it, and that's maybe that's a problem with our elites.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like right. if the elites don't want to do it, then. You gotta take what you can get at the same time. And if they're elite, put it this way. Let's say hypothetically we have the field as it is right now, and then we were to get to the convention, and then Dave Smith from the floor was like, I changed my mind, I'm fucking all in, I'm launching my bid right now.
Oh, that'd be so sweet.
You know what I mean? He would win. But my point is he would win. And everybody who put 2 years in or whatever, it wouldn't matter. And that's, I think, the dilemma for trying to get a good candidate to run. A good candidate is if you're going to get a good candidate to run, this is somebody who's going to have their own platform, their own success, their own, business or something like that, where it doesn't really make sense for them to like put the year in to do essentially ideological and political charity work. You know what I mean? Especially when historically there's no payoff. You know, like I said, Ron Paul, he put a year in, left the party not long after.
That's so old. That's the 88. You know, like you've said 100 times that like we're in a new paradigm here where we're going around the corporate media and we're doing our own thing. That starts earlier and earlier. It just does. So like
it does. And the other thing that's different that I like to think is we the caucus are now in position. Like we have all these organizers, we have all these volunteers who are ready to kind of like capture the energy of that race and like try to let people know, like, listen, we're not going to win, but we have this Project Decentralized Revolution thing that we're running, let's do something realistic. And I don't know that's ever really existed. But there was a candidate who announced earlier today who I think is going to make the race pretty interesting. Do you wanna play the video there, Aaron?
Yeah. So what's this guy's name again? I got the video from Chris Fronczak.
His name is Chris Fronczak, and I don't know how much of our audience is metalheads like me. But this guy is the vocalist for a metal band called Attila. They've been around since I think like 2007, 2008. They get like over 800,000 listeners a month. On Spotify. So they're not a small band. I'm not a huge fan of the band, so I don't know too much about the guy, but it seems like he's a friggin' character.
Yeah. I think it'll run here.
Today is the biggest day of my life. My name is Chris Fronczak, and I'm running for president of the United States of America. I am not a politician, but let's face it, the world.
Wait, did this guy say he was not a politician?
Yeah, he is not a politician.
Because he kind of looks. No, I'm kidding.
Let him make his point.
No, I know.
The world has never been helped by politicians. The government is corrupt. We don't need any more politicians running the show. We need real people, real critical thinkers. We need a candidate that represents the American population. I came from nothing, and because of the American
That's a Mexican
dream,
beer.
My God-given talents, I was able to build an empire. I want to make America a better place for everyone. I represent every single person in this beautiful country, and I want to make sure your voice is heard. That's why I believe you should vote for me to be president of the United States of America.
Okay.
So, not taking himself too seriously. Right. So I think he's going to be having some fun with it. Again, I don't really know too much about the guy. I can't speak for how like schooled in libertarianism he is or really how he carries himself or anything like that. But as a metal bro, I saw that. And then I saw that like the drummer from one of my absolute favorite bands, Born of Osiris, was like in the comments saying like, oh, dude, I'll support you. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. One of my favorite bands might be like looking at the LP now.
Yeah,
I'll have to go to their next show.
Modelo is basically apparently the number one beer in America now that Bud Light took its nosedive.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what one of the comments says. He represents everyone, then where's his Bud Light?
Yeah, yeah. No,
is,
I mean, I
is
I
he
don't
having
know
fun with that,
guy.
Or was that like, as he said, the best, the most important day of his life, or whatever? Because
I don't know. Like here, I got his wiki pulled up, because I mean, with the way he did it, you know, just kind of in a room and kind of a lackluster mic.
Yeah, that motherfucker needs dance mats big time.
Well, it depends on how serious he is. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't, just kind of the tone of it didn't strike me as too serious. He didn't say anything in particularly libertarian. You know, he basically just said right. that, you know, we don't need politicians. They're corrupt. All good, true stuff, but no real overall libertarian message. So we'll have to see how that goes. But looking at his Wikipedia, we might be able to surmise that he's pro-choice. Over the summer of 2020, it was confirmed that Fronczak had begun creating pornographic content for OnlyFans. He regularly collaborates with other adult stars in the space. So we got an OnlyFans star that's a dude in the race from Attila. I got to say, though, I support, like, again, I don't want to like vouch for the guy or anything like that. I don't know his libertarian bona fides, but if it gets the metal scene looking at the party, I support that. Like that, I mean, I'm a diehard metalhead, and that to me is exciting. I want to mix it up with some of these bands.
Well, so to a certain degree, there's no such thing as bad publicity, but then you get to a certain point into the James Weeks, you know, like yeah. I don't think we're there yet with this guy, but like, you know, it's hard enough to you want people looking, but then when people are looking, you want to put your best foot forward. So if this guy's going to come and talk about ideas and not be naked on stage, then yeah, then by all means.
So I would say, I mean, no matter what, he's going to bring a lot of people into the Libertarian Party, or he's going to put,
if he goes for it.
Sure.
I think he'll at least pull the eyes. I see Travis Bost, shout out to Travis. He's an awesome guy out of West Virginia. One of our organizers there.
Do you think he would have a shot though with delegates to get?
Well, hold up. Let me tell you what Travis has pulled up here. Travis says he was also accused but never charged of assault, or so I'm just told today. So there's two things I saw. I saw one story where this guy apparently punched a security guard in the back of the head during one of the shows because he saw the security guard like choking a fan. And he apparently like did that from the stage. But then there's another one where he apparently had sex with I think it was a 17-year-old girl, but she in the story. So of course this isn't in the headline, but in the story, the chick admits that she lied and told him that she was 19, but that's not in the headline. So, you know, that's going to be
it's
a
always
thing.
Something, man. I feel like, you know, we get so close. Yeah.
Why can't we just have somebody from the Contortionist run? Oh, you know what I mean? Or Veil of Maya.
He's going to get without a sexual assault felony to run. That'd be cool.
So Cam Anarchy, do we have a physical removal policy in place if someone tries a strip show? You should email the Convention Oversight Committee. I would hope so. I was strongly in favor of that. At the last convention and the one before that.
I think
that.
There was something kind of in place last convention.
Yeah. No more sheepish, but awkward, like, I don't know what to do while he ruins our reputation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, let's get that out of here.
Or at least have somebody at the back with to kill the cameras or something. But anyway, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm always, you know, just from, you know, what we've been doing with the Mises Caucus for the last few years, like, they're, to some degree, there's no substitute for, you know, work and organization and, you know, building relationships. And that's how we won in Reno, was by bit, getting people involved, getting people elected to office in their state LPs, getting them chosen as delegates. In some cases, you know, we pooled money and, you know, I know people carpooled and, you know, a lot of people in one hotel room, and the caucus paid for, you know, some travel bills and stuff like that. So like, it's not as simple as like, oh, I have a lot of money and a lot of Twitter followers, and therefore I'm going to have 500 people show up in DC on Memorial Day weekend. Right. Like there's a whole lot of steps between that and this. And like, even if someone famous wanted to try to hijack the LP, they would still have to, you know, we're not absolutely takeover proof, but it's how we're set up. You have to get chosen by state parties as delegates.
That's one of my favorite Angela conspiracy theories so far, by the way, of like, she is conspiring with the RFK campaign to have RFK run as in the LP. First of all, I thought we were Trumpers. Second of all, you know, I just don't. Is anyone seeing RFK people showing up in their state party? Because that's what would be happening right now. Right. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to get people to become delegates to the DNC. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't see that happening. And I mean, I support RFK insofar as, like, he's the best Democrat. And I think it would be better for the world and better for the Democrat Party if he was representative of the Democrat Party. Yeah. And I also think that the candidate should be friendly with RFK, because my prediction, you know, I know people differ on this, but my personal opinion of RFK is I see Ron in him. I don't mean like his libertarian principles, but I see him going to the DNC, like taking this whole thing to the DNC, and getting clapped back from the DMC, and then not cucking to Biden or Newsroom or whatever it might be. And then, you know, if that happens, and that whoever the LP candidate is, and I think there was a filing this week that we could talk about, but whoever the LP candidate is puts the effort in right now to become friends with him and kind of says, listen, man, I'm not trying to rub it in, but like, we're on the ballot and you're not, you know, make the Democrat Party pay and endorse us. You know, we're running on Ukraine issues. We're running on COVID issues, you know, and all of that stuff. The mainstays of your campaign are, you know, close to our heart, and make them pay and endorse us. I think that's something that could feasibly happen.
Yeah, possibly. But I think that, let's talk about the who filed to run for president this week. We might as well stop pretending that. Yeah, let's talk about it.
So, yeah, it was going around Twitter that Michael Rechtenwald from the Mises Institute put in a filing to run for president. Now, I don't know much about it, but yeah, I think Michael Rechtenwald might be running for president. I mean, we'll have to wait for an announcement to see what happens there. But I mean, if that happens, you could do a lot worse than Michael Rechtenwald. I mean, he has a very compelling story. I mean, we're talking about a guy with some pedigree. You know, he was an NYU professor. He's written 12 books. He was published academically as a Marxist. And you know, he got canceled from NYU because he was going against the social justice warrior stuff that was going on at campus. And he got canceled and like basically removed from NYU as a result of that, which red-pilled the shit out of him. And he started a journey that led him from Mises to Rothbard to Hoppe. And so the guy went from being an academically published Marxist to being like a Hoppean anarchist. And Hoppe himself was a socialist or an anarchist or something, or I'm sorry, a communist or something like that. So very, very interesting. And I think that's a compelling story in like the post-COVID America, where I think a lot of people have been red-pilled. I think a lot of people are starting to question their allegiances and all of that. So I think that's a story that you know, is compelling.
Yeah, absolutely, man. If true, the Michael Rechtenwald is throwing his hat in the ring, that would probably make him the candidate best on the global corporatist technocratic takeover of all things. But I will say, up until that point, RFK Jr. was the next best thing, and that's in the Democratic Party, as you said, so that's truly special. Michael Rechtenwald's book, The Google Archipelago, is awesome. It's a quick read, and that came out right before COVID, and if you listen to it with all that you've seen over the past couple of years in mind, it's pretty great. So I think that would be like a great messenger with a really important thing that would already resonate. Everybody knows who Klaus Schwab is, man. You know what I mean? And if you're a guy who really understands what that is, and who understands that it's, you know, corporate governmental collusion, where like the true fascist tendencies, you know, truly, right, are. If that guy can articulate that to our people, I think that would be radical. I'd be there for that.
And, And I think he's going to do a good job at that. I just started his, he's got a fairly new book out called The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty, I think. And, you know, he's been writing about this for a while now. And, you know, of all issues like that, being an expert in that area and where it intersects with COVID and, you know, inflation and economics and, you know, you will eat the bugs and all that stuff. Like, I think that is to have someone who is up to speed on like the truly the biggest thing that I think libertarians all should, we should not pretend like, I think some more, you know, the old guard of the LP is like, oh, well, that's all conspiracy theory. And if we just come with the right proposals and dress nice and show up at the debates, then people will listen to us. But no, I mean, there is an elite that runs the world, and they do have plans. They publish them. They talk about them all the time. And yeah. For the first time, I think because of all the COVID stuff, that a lot of people in America have completely lost faith in journalism, politicians. They don't believe any of it. They see what inflation is doing to their pocketbooks. And I think for the first time, a lot of people are receptive to an analysis of what's going on in the world from a libertarian perspective. And given the fact that most of, you know, whatever campaign that a libertarian candidate or any other challenger party candidate is going to run, especially in 2024, 80% of that campaign is going to be on podcasts and, you know, hopefully breaking through to some, you know, cable news and stuff like that, which Recknerwald's already done. Like, he's been on Tucker. He's been on different cable news shows and stuff already over the past 5 or 6 years. He knows how to do that. But here we have a pretty complex topic in some ways, but also a very simple one that's very urgent that he will get. I mean, that's the perfect thing to go on a podcast and talk about, right? Yeah, because dude, people like, we're not doing sound bites anymore like we were in Ron Paul 1988. We're doing, you know, 90-minute interviews.
Long form.
Yeah, and Recknerwald is perfect for that, given what he knows.
As important as shaking the kind of James Weeks, like, laughable LP, we have to shake any kind of stigma that says we're corporatist friendly or something like that, yep. Which, yeah. Again, but warranted or not, that's what
let's
it
face
is.
It, that's the rap on libertarian and right. Like libertarians outside of our bubble.
Right,
is this that, is our that first time corporate like bootlickers.
Bro, the takeover was rad. We were there for that. That was like, you know, our whole shit. But as far as the rest of the world's concerned, you know, the LP hasn't put forth, like, this is the first time we'll put forth somebody with a radical message. Like, it's really exciting. I'm not saying it's him.
Well,
but
radical. And
this is our opportunity to do so, I should say.
Radical. And I always make the distinction because I feel like there's like multiple flavors of radical. And I want to make a distinction because, like, I would argue that Ron Paul is a radical.
Yeah,
but he was a radical in his suit that was credible. You know what I mean? Like, he was principally radical. I think some people take the radical thing and kind of conflate it with like being a spectacle, you know, like, and I think that's part sure. of like Badnarik. He was a radical candidate, but I think he made a big talking point about like driving without a license and like the sovereign citizen thing. And, you know, I'm not like opposed to that stuff, but that's just not what you run a campaign on. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the truth is already radical in how full of lies our society is. And truth, I think, speaks the loudest, like, in this environment. And I don't think you have to paint it up with all of this extra like fluff and spectacle and pizzazz.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do think you have to have some oomph, you know, I think you have to have some charisma. I think you have to, you know, speak it passionately, but I don't think you have to go out and make yourself look like an asshole either, you know?
Yeah, hope not.
And I think it's also interesting that I don't know how old Michael Recknerwald is. I mean, he's got to be like late 60s, I would think. And when I heard that he was running and then contrasting it with, you know, some people maybe who we had hoped was going to, you know, were going to run and haven't or won't, like, I was thinking about, like, you know, back during the COVID thing, you know, that really hurt the music and comedy business a lot. And very few people in those worlds spoke out at all. And probably the three biggest names were Dave Chappelle, Van Morrison, and Eric Clapton. And all of those guys, Chappelle's a little younger, but all of those guys have like done and accomplished everything they're possibly going to accomplish and have basically FU money and reputation, right? Like those guys are all legends no matter what. And in other words, they are past sort of the security and comfort and reputation thing. And they were able to come out and still, you know, take a lot of heat from people. And I think it's interesting that someone who's, you know, he's, I guess, technically retired from academia, but he still does more work than the three of us put together as far as what he writes and puts out. But he's, you know, he's accomplished all he needs to accomplish and is not concerned about, you know, some of the things that a younger person might be, which I think is a, you know, that just shows, I don't know, it shows something about Michael's character that he's willing to do this because it is a thankless task. And people, you know, people from the old guard of the LP and other dark corners of the internet are going to say crappy stuff about him. And he is going to pay some sort of a cost, if only in sleepless nights over this. So I'm glad that somebody of his caliber is apparently going to give this thing a shot because we need somebody to do that.
Yeah. And what I'm most excited about is that regardless of like vote totals or any of that stuff, this is going to be, in my opinion, the candidate, whoever it is going to have, this is going to be the candidate that gets in front of more people than any LP candidate has ever gotten in front of for no other reason than the crumbling nature of the media paradigm and the ascendancy of the podcast paradigm. So like, for example, Recktenwald, if that ends up being what happens, you know, he's been on Glenn Beck's show multiple times. You know, I think he's like friendly with them. He's like I forget the title, but he's like a preeminent fellow at Hillsdale College or something. So he's in that mix as well. And has trust from those people. Well, the Blaze, so like that presidential town hall that Tucker moderated with all of the Republican candidates, he just moderated it. He's not the one who hosted that event. The Blaze hosted that event. That by itself means we have more access to what is essentially replacing the debates than we've ever had to the media or the debates or all of these things that for years and years and decades, we've said, if we could just get into the debates, and it was never going to happen. And then all that had to happen is that structure had to crumble. You know what I mean? So like, I think bare minimum, the candidate is going to get in front of more people than any LP candidate has ever been in front of, bare minimum.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we go ahead, Dave.
I just wanted to say this guy, I believe, has been invited to be a part of Jordan Peterson's anti-WEF Justice League. So that is pretty huge. If you're in that squad, that's good company to keep. I don't know, something to think about.
No, yeah. And I think that a lot of those people who are sort of a couple of steps away from the Libertarian Party, you know, a lot of people who would maybe, I haven't really been up on Glenn Beck the last few years, other than to know that Eric July and Michael Malice are on the Blaze. And in other words, a lot of those people, you know, again, I'm a Gen Xer, and I think a lot of people like conservative Christians who in the past would have been, you know, sort of, you know, hardcore Republicans, I don't think they are that anymore. And I don't think they're culturally conservative in the sense of they want to like be passing laws, you know, mandating what they believe. It's they want to withdraw from society and homeschool and farm and run their businesses without, you know, so I think a lot of people who are formerly sort of mainstream Republicans that they're now listening to Joe Rogan and want to withdraw from the state instead of take control of it. I think I could be totally wrong, but a lot of those people are, I think, willing to listen to a libertarian message. And if we have someone like Recktenwald who can explain, you know, the big picture, I think that's going to help in that podcast space that we can talk to those people. And it's not, you know, I just think he's very attractive at a time when a lot of people are willing to truly break away from DNR. I don't know. I think he's you know, kind of the same way RFK will go on and talk for a long time about stuff, and he's gotten a lot of buzz off of that. I think Rechtenwald can do the same. And could you imagine if we could somehow get, if he does jump in, get like RFK to debate Rechtenwald and whoever the Green Party candidate is or something like that? Like, I would love to see
Rechtenwald and like Cornel West at the Soho Forum or something like that.
Yeah. Yep.
And another thing I like about his pedigree that I don't know if any of the other candidates could pull this off is with his pedigree as a college professor. And like you said, he has, well, pedigree, I said it there. And like, could he penetrate colleges? Like, could he take his campaign on the road and speak to students? You know, and I know some people are like, oh man, they're all, you know, communist hellholes and, you know, this kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, I wasn't there in the crowd, but I was there in the moment when Ron Paul had like 15,000 people show up at Berkeley. You know what I mean? Like, there's people out there who want to hear, you know, what's being said. And if we can break through on that podcast circuit and kind of get the, start to change that narrative of like, it's acceptable to consider other options. And not, and like, another thing is like that, what you guys were talking about earlier is like this whole company line of like, well, I know it's a long shot, but I wouldn't be running if I didn't think I could win. And all this nonsense. Like, I swear, I think I'm like the only person who saw this and like noted it as a big moment. But like, I remember when Amash jumped into the race in 2020, he did an interview with Bill Maher. And Bill Maher popped that question of like, so what are you doing here? Do you think you can win? And he gave the company line. Yeah, you know, it's a long shot, but I wouldn't be running if I didn't think I could win. And Bill Maher basically laughed at him and said, yeah, well, you guys, libertarians, you guys, you know, you come around every 4 years and you always have a story and it always sounds the same. And that just struck me of like, that's exactly how most people probably take it.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think if we can like shed that bullshit, and this is actually something I got to give props to Josh Smith for. I really like that he's messaging this way in his campaign of like, we don't need to win. We need 5%. 5% is winning. You know what I mean? Like, and that comes across, I think, as much more earnest and much more realistic and something that it's acceptable for people. You know what I mean? Like, okay, they're not bullshitting me. And I think people are craving for like authenticity as well. You know, I think that's the attraction to Trump, right? Is at least perceived authenticity.
And that's not arbitrary, right? 5% is a reasonable goal that will get you major party status. And then we could stop with all this fucking ballot access bullshit. Ah, it's intolerable. You know what I'm saying? Then we could just be on the ballot. That would be so much better.
Yeah.
It's just so much money, energy, time, all the resources going into this shit. I'm looking at you, New York. Those guys they're the best people, and they have the worst ironclad, you know, hammer thrown upon them. But don't waste your money and time doing that crap when we could just, that's what national, if we're talking about the LP, that's what I would tell those guys to do. You should be focusing on how to get 5%. And if you're running for president on the LP ticket, no matter who you are, yeah, props to Josh, because everybody should be talking about that 5%.
I was going to pull that out up too. I feel like I want to comment every time I see that. So,
first of all, do you guys know what the Chinatown bus is?
No.
Okay. So as someone who's married to someone whose parents are from Taiwan, so in like a lot of major cities, and I've taken the Chinatown before I met my wife, actually, I took the Chinatown bus from New York to DC. So it's like a bus. There's buses that go all across the country that you pick them up at Chinese restaurants and stuff. And there's one in New York City, Chinatown, that for like, it was 20 years ago, for like 10 bucks or 15, you could ride all the way down there. So people who are in the Asian American community and the libertarian guys with Asian Wives Facebook group that I'm in, we all know about the Chinatown bus, and it's awesome. So, but like what he's saying is exactly what Project Decentralized Revolution is.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say this is a perfect opportunity to get the plugs out that we neglected at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
runislibertarian.com. So, but I do want to address the comment too, because I see this stuff, and it's, trust me, we totally agree. Like, and we've developed Project Decentralized Revolution as our strategy year over year to do exactly that. You know, so we are right now doing training every single month to recruit people and train them and to run for city council and city council, mayor, school board, sheriff, judge, winnable races that libertarians can and do already win, that if we just scaled up what percentage of libertarian candidates are running for, we will dramatically increase how many libertarians are in office. You know, the idea is that, because it has to be a year over year strategy. So like, I'm going to get into some of the details of the strategy. So the idea is like year one, you can go to all the county governments in your state and find out the vote totals of all of the local level races that happened in your state. So like in Pennsylvania, a guy named BJ Hebenfeld did this work found out that there is 36 races for those types of offices where the grand total was 50 votes or less. Now, when I went to Young Americans for Liberty candidate training, they had a statistic that 1 in 7 doors gets you a vote. So that means if you knock like 200 doors, you could friggin' win. Seriously. You could beat an incumbent. You know what I mean? Like, and 200 doors is not a lot at all. You get 3 dudes, you could do that in a week or two. You know what I mean? Like, and you do it twice, get more. So year one, you find the lowest rung of votes, and then the state party forms a campaign to recruit people to run for that. Now, other people are going to say, well, I'm running here and I'm running here, and good for them. But that's your year one call to action. You have 50 votes or less, whatever that bottom rung might be in your state. So then you go into the next year, and you know, you're not going to have local level races that year. Usually in most states, it's not always like this, but in most states, that following year, you're going to have your state house races in like Congress or Senate and stuff like that. So what you then do is treat state house races as the bench to train people to run for the local level races next year. So, cause that's still they're not going to win yet, but it's still the smallest office that can be sought. And then, so what you do is you ostensibly run for state house and aim that entire campaign in the locality that you would otherwise be running for, so that you get some name recognition, you build some allies, maybe you get on a board, so that when the following year comes around and you run that playbook again, you are now in a position to run and win. And if you do this a few years, some of those people who are elected are going to be able to, maybe then they'll be in a position to run for state house. And if you get to a point where libertarians can get 3 or 4 state house people in a state, it doesn't take much to be like, hey, Republicans, that budget you just tried to pass doesn't have a single cut. So it's either you make some cuts or you get nothing and we just block you. You know, Democrats, that thing that you just tried to pass does nothing to preserve civil rights. Either you give us some civil rights or you get nothing. Yep. And it doesn't take that much to actually do that if you could just get into position. So the idea with where the presidential race fits into all of this is the presidential race is the biggest opportunity that you have to draw, like to be the megaphone and draw attention to the party and draw attention to the ideas and the principles and all of that and get people excited and bring them into the party. And then once they're in the party, you then funnel them into this this strategy. That is the Project right. Decentralized Revolution strategy. So please don't tell me that we have to focus on local level races. I know.
Yeah, we definitely do. But I mean, absolutely, man. Like having, you know, we got to take the world as it is, not the way we want it to. And people need leadership and somebody at the front holding the torch. Like, again, Dave Smith would have been great because so many people... Imagine all the manpower you would have gotten out of that campaign. Imagine all of the people that would have been inspired to run for, you know, city council and whatever. Because as we were talking about earlier, it is oftentimes a thankless job filled with shitty people that you don't want to be doing. That's why busybodies are attracted to politics and the live and let live types usually just want to be left alone, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think the only difference is historically, the presidential races happen. They generate some level of enthusiasm. Like even Joe Jorgensen had some level of enthusiasm. Like I remember the Facebook with the one Facebook group with 60,000 people in it, and the other Facebook with like 35,000-40,000 people in it. Like I remember that. And you know, these poor bastards, they would be in this group talking about like, she's going to get 12%. I know it. You know, like this is the year that we get in the debates. And then nobody from the campaign has the balls to be like, listen, I appreciate that you're excited, but that's not how it works here. You know, and then they just let it go. And then the race happens. They get 2%. the money to the campaign stops, so all the effort stops, and then there's no effort to then like absorb that energy or funnel that those people who were excited into something that's actually realistic and doable. So then they say, what the fuck did I just spend my time with? 2%. I thought we were getting into debates. We're fucked. Yeah. And then they just leave.
Yeah.
And not only that, but like in 2016, Gary Johnson got like 4.5 million votes. And none of those people, we got Larry Sharp, who's awesome. And I've met like one or two other people who came into the party because of Gary Johnson. For the most part, a lot of people saw, oh, it's Trump versus Hillary. They're both horrible. I'm going to vote for, oh, this Johnson guy seems okay. Well, I'm going to vote for him. So like what Josh was saying, Josh Smith, you know, I'd rather have, you know, 4,000 activists and volunteers and active party members than 4 million voters who just vote and then we never hear from them again. Like if we get, you know, I don't know what that was like 3.3% or whatever. So if 5% is truly the goal, then I guess I'd take 7 million voters over 7,000 activists. But up until we hit that 5% thing, like I'd rather have, you know, 4,000 Larry Sharps than one Larry Sharp and 4 million votes, I guess. So.
Yeah. If I had to pick, I would have that same calculus.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, let's hope that we get an announcement from Recklinwald here soon.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That will be cool.
I want to hear the collective when that happens. I'll be there for that.
Well, I haven't heard much from the, you know, the people that we drove from the field at Reno. Like they're
you haven't.
They've been kind of.
I certainly have, and I think that's like, what we should probably spend the rest of the.
Well, maybe because I never show on Twitter. Maybe that's just I'm not hearing them. But like, I haven't heard.
Oh God! If you listen to these people, everything is awful. The party is on fire. It's a disaster. The takeover is a disaster. We're at all time low numbers in everything. And all of this stuff. You know what I mean? And like, look. Nobody ever promised that things would be perfect. And like, a lot of these board members are new. And I do think there are things that have gone wrong. And I'd be happy to talk about them. But the messaging has turned around radically. And that was the biggest thing, you know, like that was the biggest thing that needed to happen first. Like the party has been different for a year and a half. And so like there's this concerted effort by those types of people to like pull their membership or pull their donations and then say, ha ha, see, you're losing membership. How awful. It's all your fault. And like, the corollary that I like to remind people of this is like, one, there was some expectation that there might be a dip in year one because the party had been like, or year one, or I should say term one, because the party had been like this, like on this terrible trajectory to where like we're endorsing lockdowns and we're calling Ron Paul a Russian racist and all of this wild crap for almost 20 years, meaning the donors had come to expect that, like, things have to wash out. Like, could you imagine if, like, what would libertarians say if 5 years into drug legalization in Portugal that, you know, it's like, well, addiction's up, violent crime's up, you know, teen use is up. Like, would we then say, oh, well, I guess we have to support the drug war now? No, we wouldn't. But the fact of the matter is that at least for year one and I think year two, that's exactly what happened in Portugal. I chalk it up to, I mean, I don't know this, but I chalk it up to all the people who were like motivated to OD did so. And, you know, that's sad and everything. I don't mean to make light of it. But then what we come to now call this massive success happened after that. And it's because there was this change. Everything had to wash out. So the biggest thing that has happened in the party where it's like, oh, God, look at the numbers is like because the fundraising numbers are down. And so. But the biggest part of that is the payment processor. And this is all like inside baseball, boring bullshit that is not sexy or fun. But like they had a payment processor and the staff that was left over from the old regime, the IT staff, all recommended merging what was called Razor's Edge into Civi CRM. And you know what happened when they did that? It failed. And so like everyone, and myself included, said, yeah, we should make Civi CRM the single source of all the data. Like, why not? I mean, that's where you're going to do all the email stuff from. And it failed. And it didn't fail because, oh, the board screwed it up. It failed because Civi CRM is a free and open source system that you have to like program everything into or add everything onto, whereas Razor's Edge is a fully formed third party product. And so like these systems, whether it's Stripe, whether it's Razor's Edge or different payment processors, they put all of the contacts into these like digitized tokens. So like, Dave, if you were to donate to the caucus, technically in the payment processor, there is a token for Dave Casey, a digital token for Dave Casey that has all of the information of all of your transactions and all of that. And these third-party systems all have that in common with each other so that I can very easily transfer from one system to the other. And I've done that. I've went from Stripe to Anadot. Because Civi CRM is a third-party, you know, like you make it yourself type of system, that system was not there. So all those digital tokens didn't translate. And they lost all of their monthly donors based on the advice of the staff from the old regime, you know, and like, what are they supposed to, you know what I mean? Like that's a huge problem. They lost over six figures because of that. And then spent 3 months calling everybody to try to get them back. But all that revenue from those 3 months was gone.
Yeah. I mean, that's tragic and is their fault. I mean, right. Is that, there's no one, I mean, I'm not saying, oh, somebody needs to resign, or I'm not calling anybody anything. I'm just saying like, okay, well, you guys fucked up, right? That's fair at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, y'all and fucked like, up. You lost money. Okay. Like, all right. Just calling it out, you know.
But then here's the other thing is, and I don't want to name names and like beat people down and stuff like that, but there was a staff hire that there was one person who was in a position to red light and green light projects. And I can say this because they talked to me on the phone personally about their logic about what they were doing, you know? So like, this isn't hearsay or, oh, I talked to a board member about staff or anything like that. This was direct with me and this person. They basically felt that the CRM was so screwed up that if we launched any programs to forward the party with, that those programs would generate data, that data would feed into the CRM. The CRM would then screw up the data and then the problem would get compoundingly worse. And then their solution to this was, we just can't have any new programs. And I'm like, you're out of your friggin' mind. You know what I mean? Like, wait, like there's ways around this, even if that is true of the CRM, which I'm not even denying that the CRM was an issue, but like you could just not upload the data to the CRM and then save it until the CRM is ready and then open that floodgate and let the programs go. So all I'm saying is that it's not a coincidence that like in the past month and a half that the party has launched Voter Gravity, which is like candidate support software for door knocking and phone banking and all of this stuff. You're seeing a membership drive. You're seeing new anti-war events. You're seeing updates to the store. You're seeing all of this stuff just flood out in the past year and a half. This stuff has been on the desk of the board for a while. They were just held back.
Yeah. Well, I have a quick question. And maybe you can answer this and talk to me like I'm double vaccinated, double boosted on top. But we went through all the trouble of electing all these people because, you know, democracy and everything to the board, Angela as the chair. And, you know, there's only so many like paid positions that the LP has. I'm not sure, maybe a half a dozen. But the executive director is a highly paid, I'd say, for the organization that we're running anyway, position. So why would we have somebody who is, like Angela, I believe, is not paid, right? But we elect her to run the party-ish, I guess. I mean, that's, I'm thinking the chair should...
The bylaws say that the chair is like the CEO of the board.
Okay, so cool.
That's not the exact language, but something like that.
So do we need an entirely other... It sounds like, you know, like the government on top of the democracy that inevitably gets built. Why do we need somebody else?
I think the idea is that you almost have like a triumvirate at the top. I think this is the structural idea. And we... flat out, we intend to put forward some pretty big bylaws changes to change the structure of the whole LNC at this next election. I don't want to say too much about that because we're not concrete on where we're going yet. We have ideas. We want to make it more business-like and have things defined a lot better. So, but I think the idea is that you've got the chair who is like the CEO, and then you have the vice chair who is like their assistant, you know what I mean? And then you have, there's no bylaw like demanding that you have an executive director, but the idea is that you have a staff and somebody needs to be the chief of staff over that staff that manages them, so that you have this triumvirate of chair, vice chair, executive director, and like the executive. So they all talk and kind of game plan and form the vision. The vice chair helps the chair carry that out and delegate it amongst the board and the committees. And then the executive director basically oversees the management of the staff. And I think, and then, so then they go out and do their thing. Information comes back through and up to them. Just new decisions get made and then back and forth and back and forth.
Bro, I hate it. I can't believe all this money and back and forth and bureaucracy built around. I haven't seen enough done to warrant it. That's my critique. I'll throw that.
Well, I think there are structural problems with the LNC. And I don't think we're the only ones thinking that.
Yeah,
like okay. I've heard one idea that is fucking nuts of like make all of the state
isn't
chairs
weird to have somebody right. Isn't that weird to have Angela unpaid and somebody who reports to her making six figures? That's
the
fucking
idea
weird.
Is that whoever that is going to have a better skill set in things that you need. You know what I mean? Because like,
did
so
that
for
work
example,
out? Did that work out?
I think it has the potential to, but if you make a bad hire who does things, but yeah. Again, like, and the board has the ability, like there's nothing in the bylaws that says you must have an executive director. It just talks about staff. So they have the discretion to say, okay, we're going to create this job to serve the board or that, you know what I mean? Like they have that discretion. So I'm not even saying that the executive director model is the best. I'm just telling you what I think has been done before and what they were going for.
Yeah, I think for an organization that's struggling to get donations, they should rethink that.
Yeah, well, I think it's hard to get donations when you don't have programs.
Yeah,
because again, when you are, and I know this because I've asked for money for people. It sucks. It really sucks. But if you're going to go to people and say, "Hey, I need $10,000," you can't go to them and be like, "Hey man, my political party has really great principles. Can you please give me $10,000? That's not how it works. You have to say, "Listen, we have this project that we want to unroll, right? And we need to raise $10,000 in order to do it. And if we get it, we're going to do this. And we're hoping that the outcome is that. And the evidence that we have that it will achieve that is this." You know what I mean? Like you have to have these concrete things to give to people and say, "Okay, yes, I buy into that. I'm buying what you're selling," you know?
Rage Against the War Machine worked out pretty well. I know that wasn't an official party endeavor, but
they raised them through that other organization. Yes, but that's a good example. But I'm saying there hasn't been mailers. There wasn't new programs. I was told point blank that we couldn't even by this person that they couldn't even do a membership drive.
Yeah, that and I'm like, that whoever this person, this mighty person, they stopped us from doing everything. That's crazy.
It is, but I don't want to go too into the weeds with it, but I think the situation became such that they are not here anymore.
Word.
and it's not a coincidence that changed. And now again, you're seeing mailers going out, you're seeing candidate support software, you're seeing candidate trainings, you're seeing a membership drive, you're seeing anti-war, more anti-war events, you're seeing Operation Warhawk. You're seeing like, there's all of this shit that's flooded out of the party in the past month that has been sitting on the desk for a while, updates. Yeah.
Tell them to pin that tweet.
Operation Warhawk.
Yeah. It came out and it was just gone. So pin that for a little bit. Let's ride that out.
Dude, I can tell you that with that, I'm not going to name names, but I know of one state chair already who claims that they were offered a bag to not do that.
Wow. See, that means we got to pin that tweet, share it some more. Yeah. See who else gets offered the bag. Yeah. Yep. That's cool, man. It's a good ad and a good idea.
Yeah.
Well,
but
and just,
go ahead.
Just to wrap it up, kind of wrap put a bow on the whole LNC stuff. So I was the state central committee chairman of Ohio back in like late 2012 for a few years. And like they were talking, LNC was talking about like trying to do the CRM, get it together back then. So like, this has been a disaster for more than 10 years. And, and the structure, bylaws are the death of an organization. Now, yeah. I mean, you do have to have bylaws, but to have these Byzantine, how the LNC is set up is just bananas. And it is made for people who like to LARP at politics and who like to go to meetings and make motions and, you know, throw a spanner into the works to gum everything up. And that's what's been going on with the LP for 50 years. And so to get this ship, it's like turning around an ocean liner, right? Yeah. Like it's
literally in the CIA playbook. Yeah. That's what they want us to do, bro. Play in the bylaws.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's a long process.
Right. And so there's these landmines that were left behind. And then this doesn't even get into what the fuck is going on in Michigan. Like, I don't know if it's widely known what's going on in Michigan. I'll try to do my best to. After we won at Reno, a group of people came back and to Michigan. And this is a very long story short, and I'm not doing it justice, but long story short, stole the party's data and then started and then broke off and formed their own board, called a separate convention, even though they had already, when they were a part of the board of the actual party, called for a convention there. So broke off, created another board, stole the data, started emailing that data about another convention at a different place on the same day. And yeah, so like the party had launched a lawsuit to enforce their trademark, against this rogue group of people claiming to be the Libertarian Party of Michigan when they're not. And there's two court cases going on in Michigan as a result of this. There's this court case with the trademark, which, by the way, the court just in about 30 minutes of a hearing filed a preliminary injunction against the official name is the Knockoff Party, that they must stop calling themselves a Libertarian Party. They must stop using the brand, which it's a pretty high bar to get that to happen. It's pretty likely that they're going to lose the case as a result of losing this preliminary injunction. And then there's a second case revolving around the same manner where both of these parties were basically laying claim to, well, the party and the rogue group claiming to be the party were laying claim to the same bank account. And so like, the actual party had produced minutes, had produced like the LNC's ruling that this is our actual party and all of this stuff, and was able to get cashier's checks from the bank. But then the other group said, no, we're the party. Here's our crap and blah, blah, blah. So then the party, the bank basically said, screw this. We need a ruling on who to do business with. We don't even know I don't even know what's going on anymore. You know, there is an act, like when you take that and you look at like there was a rogue group that's calling themselves the party in Massachusetts. They tried it in Delaware and were beat back. They tried it in New Hampshire and were beat back. They tried it in New Mexico and were beat back. You know, we are just now finishing off paying lawyers from a frivolous friggin' defamation lawsuit that was launched against us that we won. You know what I mean? Like there is absolutely an assault being done on the party by losers who lost and don't want to like acknowledge that they lost or acknowledge that their lack of leadership or their lack of vision led the party where it was. It can't be that. It has to be that we're Nazis and we're racist and we're awful and we deserve all this crap. And sometimes it can get hard for people, I think, to stay on focus when all of this bombardment of shit is happening to people who are new board members, a lot of them.
Yeah. Dude, I just want to say, I mean, these guys, Mike, you've talked a lot about how, you know, it's not about the philosophy, like it's about character. And these guys are straight up Saul Alinsky, rules for radicals, get the power, do whatever you have to do to tear people down. When the Mises Caucus was coming up, we hated that regime, but we never said, take all your money out, take it out and donate to the caucus or something like that.
We were actively bringing people into the party in an environment where they were liable to be called Nazis by the actual chair.
Yeah.
Right. And if we can stay in and grow in that environment, there is no excuse for this kind of behavior other than they are low character. And if they're low character, then good, leave. I don't care what the numbers say, leave. Yeah. Because we want the healthy husk to grow with, not this, you know, infestation of bad character that would lead us to this.
So that's something that is harder to sell to somebody than, you know, just tearing. It's easy to tear shit down. It's easy to go, you know, bad man, racist man, or whatever. That's super easy to like, but to tell people the story of like, yo, man, taking over this party was difficult. It was shitty for 50 years. Then we had to do the takeover. Then,
right. Of course, and that's
tough. That's a tough
sell. Now that we're the part, right. Now, yeah. And I don't plan on like running with this all the time or some shit. This, the episode, the name of this episode was.
I mean, it's just harder to convey.
No, we the caucus focus on Project Decentralized Revolution. We focused on the tour. We're focused on training. We're endorsing candidates and spending money on candidates right now. That's what we're doing. And, you know, kind of going back again a little bit, this is a theory of mine. My theory, though, is that you had Michael Badnarik in 2004, right? And then come 2005, you had that convention and the Portland Massacre, and that's essentially where the Prags took over. Yep. Fast forward to 2008, you have Bob Barr, probably the worst candidate we've ever had. And not only the worst candidate that we've ever had, the worst candidate that we ever had at a time that Ron Paul was running in the Republican Party. Okay, so you had an exodus of people from the LP to help Ron Paul, and then an influx of whatever is attracted to Bob Barr. And that demographic shift, I suspect, made it so that the Prags didn't really have to exert themselves too much in order to maintain vision control over the party. Yeah. And my suspicion is that if you have this exodus of the liberals formerly known as left libertarians, and let's say Michael Rechtenwald ends up being the candidate or something like that, then you have this influx of people, and he gets in front of more people than any LP candidate has ever been in front of, like we were talking about earlier. And then you have an influx of as little as 10,000 people from something like that. That demographic swap, I think, is going to put us in that same position where we don't really have to exert anything anymore. It just is. You know what I mean? And so then the only step after that would be to institutionalize the strategy of Project Decentralized Revolution. And then that is the party then.
Right. Which is what must be done. So that is, again, part of the really appealing part of a Michael Rechtenwald Hoppian at the front, leading the charge, because he'll bring in maybe some post-libertarians will become current libertarians again. Won't that be cool? I don't know.
So here's a good example. Hector, when is the ONC going to bring back referral links for Dave Smith and Tom Woods? That program is up. People can apply to get referral links. Maj has one. That is something that has been pushed. That's another thing that was on the desk for a while. That is, you know, so you can email the ONC and request a referral link. I don't think they have like a page up yet to apply for it, but that is something that's there.
Get paid.
Yeah, it just got up. And who else has one of those right now that we already sent out? Does Maj has his up and running, I think?
Yeah, I think Maj was like the beta for it. Yeah. And I don't want to name everybody, but I know there's a line of people who have applied and getting it.
Yeah, well, we got to check to see if they're still interested, because a lot of those people have been on that list for 6 months.
No. I'm talking about people who, since it's launched, you know, have done it. The people that you're interested in talking about, yes, need to be followed back up with. But I can tell you some of those people from 6 months ago are in line to get it now. It's so much easier to talk about the negative and for Twitter to feed the algorithm with the negative. But I mean, personally, them announcing voter gravity, that to me is like a major, 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 major victory. And for anybody who's not familiar with voter gravity, it's campaign software that is connected to a data firm that will allow candidates to purchase data right into this program to then generate walk lists with or call bombs with, and not just political data, but like you can buy commercial data of like whatever's available anyway. But like you could find out who's subscribed to a gun magazine, you know, or who is responded to some poll about they're interested in drug legalization. And then not only do you have a walk list, but you know something about the person you're walking up on, so you know how to message them. And so like this software can do all of that. It can do phone bombing, text bombing, all of this stuff. And the party basically just partnered with this organization to give them money, so that acts as a subsidy so that candidates can get it for really cheap, which happens to like play in perfectly with the fact that we have like 400 people who have signed up to run as local level candidates that we have been training. You know, like I'm trying to convince the the candidate support committee to make this software their pet project, like just host trainings on the software over and over and over again, and make sure, like, work with the state parties, make sure every candidate knows that this is available. But I don't know of anything like that happening in the past from the national party. You know what I mean? I don't know anything like the affiliate link happening from the party. What happened in the old party was they made an affiliate link. They saw that Dave Smith line signed up for it and then canceled it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's my rant.
So what about, I think Maj might be a good, if Rechtenwald does run, that would be a nice contrast that I think would be pretty complimentary.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I like Maj. I like Clint. Again, I don't know enough about this Franzak guy, like his libertarian bona fides and all of that, but so
well,
I reserve
you because you're hosting the show. I'll say I know enough about that guy that he will not have my support. No,
I reserve the right to take this back is essentially what I'm saying. But on paper, like it's the drummer of my favorite fucking band that supports him, man.
That's all good. I want somebody who's led a fucking noble ass career of his own, built something himself. I mean, he did build a cool band, I guess.
He did.
Cool brand, but I don't know, man. I need somebody virtuous, not a porn hustler. Call Andrew Tate if you want somebody who makes OnlyFans.
It's all voluntary, bro.
Yeah, I get it. I don't know. I'm just not into, you know. I know it's work.
But also, this guy's like in his 30s, and he's, you know, having sex with a... Even though she said she was 19, that's... To me, that's suspect enough. But, like, the fact that she wasn't, like, that's not good.
I reserve the right to be, you know, to be wrong. I'm just saying, on paper, I like the idea of a metal bro bringing metal bros that otherwise wouldn't look at the party into the party, and that there's nobody else in the field that can offer that. And that's essentially how I view VP. Yeah. Like,
no, I
president,
I agree.
Biggest, bestest libertarian with the widest reach, VP, libertarian, not necessarily the biggest, bestest libertarian, but somebody who has something that they can offer to the president that can, and can penetrate into markets where the president can't. And then that way it's synergistic. You know what I mean? That's at least how I view it. Yeah. So for those reasons, I would absolutely take Maj and Clint over him. If we can convince either one of them to do it, that would be great.
Maj would be spectacular if he is interested in it. But don't forget, Josh is working real hard, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I think he'll stay in until the end. So will Termott. But I bet you I could see Michael Rechtenwald and Josh Smith as a ticket.
Do you know Termott fairly well?
I've met him in person, you know, a couple times. He came to a LP meeting here, and then he did our convention.
He seems like a good guy. I wish he would, like, he's got a law enforcement background. He should run for sheriff somewhere, right? Like, that would be
well, that's what we
ass.
Told him. That's what, listen, yeah, me and Dan Smott did a couple presidential interviews so far, and he was one of them. And we gave him the business, bro. You know, I don't know. He comes from the George H.W. Bush White House as an economist there, taught in, like, you know, George Washington University, and, you know, then went on to be a cop and retired, like, loving being a cop. You know, like, no apology tour or nothing, you know?
Oh, wow.
So he's not my candidate. Plus, he, like I said, he's out there going, I'm the guy. Let me tell you why. Like, that's not what I want to move forward out of that paradigm where we.
Well, to me, yeah,
we
that's
find
like
our
if
guy
you have to...
and we solicit. Would you be interested in running for president? Because I think you would do a good job.
And I've met the guy, and he seems. I don't have any beef with him, or I think he's a good guy as far as I know. But, like, again, somebody like that who does have, assuming, you know, I have no reason to doubt that he is now a libertarian and all that. But, like, if you do have an impressive resume in a particular field, then try to leverage that and start lower on the, you know, totem pole. And, like, imagine if we did have ex-law enforcement people, ideally those who would have had maybe a, you know, an epiphany of, like, what have I been doing my whole life, and having guys like that run for sheriff, like, that would be awesome. And if he really wants to run for president and gets elected, you know, somebody who's elected sheriff a couple of times, like, hey, then hop in there, right? Because, like, as far as, like, the localization and the nullification strategy, there's not, I don't think in most states, like, the sheriff is, like, really powerful as far as, like, what he can just, like, refuse to do.
Whoever's in the chat saying that you're running for president, in our chat, you just come up as Facebook user. So I can't tell who you are.
Yeah, there's a weird thing if you connect through either a Facebook group, I think it is, that StreamYard won't, it doesn't process their name, so it shows up. So if you're coming up, the person who says I'm running for president, yeah, you got to type your name in there. If that's for real. Oh, Otto. You nice. See that, Mike?
I vote for Otto.
Yeah. Otto's great. Even though he's a Washington Nationals fan, I don't.
Hector said, Dr. Mike Termont, PhD in economics, lecturer, cop, Gold New Deal. That's the Florida. I don't know if Hector is backing him up, but that's the Florida connection. Those guys are all in on the Termont train. But I'll go to war with you guys. I don't care.
Otto's cool for a hardcore guy, which is like basically hard punk. He's not a metalhead. He did come to the Lamb of God show with us, though. That was cool.
That's funny. Yeah. I really like Michael Rechtenwald a lot. And to me, the more the merrier. Like even this metal guy, the Franchik guy or whatever his name is, like if he brings it and is not, you know, I mean, if he runs the gauntlet like everybody else, then, and that's one of the good things about our system in the LP, which I actually like, given, you know, a lot of the stuff, how the LNC is set up, like we actually have a convention where you actually have to campaign among delegates and we can decide, somebody can jump in at the last minute. Unfortunately, sometimes you get Bill Weld, you know, hey, I'm a libertarian for life. And a bunch of people bought that in 2016, but, I don't think that's going to happen given, you know, the delegate makeup now. But let's say that, you know, Josh Smith, the other people who are in, Rechtenwald, I don't know, whoever else wants to get on in and, you know, let's get the best guy to win.
Let's end on this. Do you think Amash runs? And if he did, do you think he would get the nomination?
I'll let you go, Dave.
If Amash gets in, then it is our job to stop that from happening. And I think it would absolutely be done. And I'll take it one step further. If the Mises Caucus doesn't run the House and decide all the shit in DC, then we definitely failed. You know, bigly. So that's just something I'll put out right now. If we don't get to pick the guy and run the show and tell people how it goes in 2024, then we fucked up. I'm not even going to blame Dave Smith on that one. You know, just we have to figure that out as of now going forward. And so it would be our job to tell Justin Amash, or ask him rather, what have you done for me lately? Where the fuck have you been? You know what I'm saying?
Where has he been?
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing out of that guy. So, and it's funny, the same critics who will be like, oh, these guys are alt-right Republican infiltrators, they would love to bring back another Republican like Justin Amash. I know he went yellow there for a little bit before he was done with his time, but he was a Republican. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
And that's the other thing. It's like his little passive-aggressive thing at Reno and just like being very...
and denying it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just like Bush League. I mean, that's just like really bad. And like,
you know what actually pissed me off about that isn't even that he did it. I can respect a troll.
Yeah.
But he was dishonest in the language.
Yeah.
The word libertarian did not exist in Mises' writing. And so he made it, because he would have been forced to say the liberal believes this, the liberal believes that, which would have drawn no boos whatsoever.
Yeah.
So he changed the language away from what Mises actually said in order to troll and then act like he didn't do it.
Right. That's the thing is like somebody who doesn't want to, you know, mix it up. And like, I don't know. And also you have to remember he has Trump derangement syndrome too. Hmm. Like it's fine to be against Trump. I'm against Trump. Trump's an idiot. But like to be, you have to be against him for the right reasons. And apparently, I don't know if Amash just hated Trump so much that he bought, like he didn't believe the Russia hoax, but said he did, or that he's dumb enough to fall for the Russia hoax and all that stuff. Like, to me, that disqualifies him. And like, as you know, talk about low energy, man. I mean, he might actually win because he might put all the actual delegates to sleep, and like the three guys who want to vote for him stay awake, and he might win. Like, that's his strategy, man. That guy, man, he, not
yeah,
exactly.
I'm already bored. You're right, bro.
Just thinking all of right. the guy makes me sleepy.
All right, so let's wrap on that. Dave, where can people follow you?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Dave versus Goliath 1, and if you would give me a follow on YouTube, the show is called Dave versus Goliath, and yeah, we'll be back doing that real soon. And I appreciate the time, guys. You're the best, and the mighty Meacocks will rise again and again and again.
Hell yeah, man. Yep, so takehumanaction.com, sign up for the newsletter, follow what's going on with the convention, with the presidential race, with Project Decentralized Revolution, what's going on with Defend the Guard. You know, we had recently recruited about 200 people to do phone banking for that. I think they did a few thousand calls total, something like that, flipped three House congressmen so far. If they flip two more, it's going to pass the House, if I have that right. So shit's going down, man. It's all good. And then I also want to give a shout out to Ben Weir in New Hampshire, because, you know, say what you want about Chris Fronczak, but I do think, even if it ends up being a disaster, I do think it's kind of cool that
he took human, you know, action, man. Hell
yeah. Yeah, man. And he's he's doing his thing with the emo caucus. I think we're going to be working with him for our event at Reno, because I'm pretty sure that the national convention is actually going to have cool speakers on its own this year, so we don't have to be like the cool libertarian speaker event, and we could just like throw a rave or something like that. So I think we're going to be working with Ben on that, and he's the one who got Chris Fronczak in the party, which, again, don't support him if you don't want to, but I do think it's cool to have like a well-known metal guy who might be able to get other metal bands into the fold, and I've done some work in that arena, and this is going to help me at least with that. So
hell yeah,
I appreciate it. Shout out to Ben Weir.
All right, guys. Yeah, we'll do we have a guest yet for next week, Mike? Or
no, I'm slacking.
Nobody nailed down. We'll get somebody. So, yeah, next week, 7:30, unless something really weird happens. Brandy should be back, too. So, yeah, Dave, it's always good to see you. And, yeah, we got I'm excited about the Defend the Guard stuff. So if you guys want to get involved with that, takehumanaction.com, get on the mailing list. I'm going to send out another update about that for everybody soon. And yeah, we I guess we can sign off, right? You ready, Mike?
Peace out.
Okay, we'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.